Welcome to Combat Gauge, Wargamer Online's official Age of Sigmar podcast. Hello and welcome to episode 5 of Combat Gauge. Today I am joined by the entire WGO team. I have Jack.
Hello.
Luke.
Hello.
And Liam, how you doing, mate?
Hi, guys.
Jolly good. It's great to be all back together in these troublesome times. Today's episode is going to be all about the Order Battle Tome Seraphon. Just a little bit of background. Of course, the book's been out for a while, but interestingly enough, one thing we've noticed as we've been putting out battle reports over the last 8-9 weeks now is Seraphon are getting a hell of a lot more interest than anything else. And I think that's just one of those coincidences of timing, really. A lot of people received the book, a lot of Seraphon players out there wondering how does this play out, and then not being in a position to play the games because of the social distancing that's come about from COVID. So the battle reports have certainly attracted a lot of attention. We've had a bit of on-play experience, but at the same time, we've been cross and comparing notes with the rest of the team, Liam, Luke, and we thought it'd be a great time right now. Now, we've had a little bit of experience, and these guys have had some feedback from us as well on how it's playing, to sort of compare and contrast our ideas for the book. We're going to be working through, some of the key areas of the book, a little bit about the lore, but not a lot, but mainly focusing on rule and gameplay. I think we'll have a look at the battle tomes. We'll see what units are favored by each of us. And then maybe towards the end of the show, just a quick chat through what do we think the lists are going to look like when the tournaments resume? What's a fun list to play versus what is an extremely competitive list to play? Okay, I think that's it for today's show. Without further ado, let's have a little bit of a dip into the lore and see what the guys have got to say on it. Okay, Jack, I think it's probably fair to say you've got the most gameplay experience,
yeah.
But at the same time, you've spent a bit of time with the book, although you've done quite a bit of work with Liam on reviewing it. But
yeah.
Can you cover for us a little bit of background how the lore has changed around Seraphon?
Yeah, I mean, so everybody knows that kind of come the end times of the old world, the lizard men retreated onto their ziggurat ships and they crusaded into the stars and kind of managed to survive the collapse of the world and the birth of the mortal realms. And then kind of come the age of chaos, their ships started to run out of fuel. So they started landing all around the mortal realms because, Seraphon, whilst they are a force of order, they're like this cold savagery, single-minded annihilation of chaos. That's all they care about.
So really, it's not just... It is a change in lore, but it's more an extension
of
it.
Yeah, exactly.
And they've moved their timeline forward, basically.
Yeah, so as the ships landed, the creatures were still beings of starlight. They were these magical creatures. They were demons at the end of the day, celestial demons. So they were coming out of these ships, coming out of the spawning pools, crafted from starlight, and they weren't really living organisms, so to speak. And that's what's your starborn, yeah? So they're born of starlight. And as times progressed, they begin to coalesce into living creatures, much as like magma cools to rock, a hard substance. That's what the Seraphon have actually done. So over time, they begin to cool down, their scales become hard, their skin becomes tougher, and they become living, breathing organisms. No longer these demons of starlight, but actual breathing things, which is kind of where you then get the two schools of play here. You've got the Starborn, which is your Dracothian's Tail and your Fangs of Sotek, and the Coalesced, which is the Kotal's Claw and the Thunder Lizards. That's where you kind of get the divide in the army.
So we've got the four main constellations there presented in the battle tome.
Yeah.
Two of them are Starborn, and
yep.
Although Luke will shoot me down very quickly, but essentially play very similar to what Seraphon players are used to.
Yeah, I mean, basically, Starborn is what their old rules were.
But updated. You know, the rules are updated. So there is a change of play anyway, even if you're taking Starborn.
And then Coalesced was just this completely new way to play it, kind of almost going back to old fantasy. Coalesced personally feels more about stoic blocks of Saurus Guard, these cold-blooded hunting animals that will just rip you to pieces with their fangs and clubs.
Okay. Well, I know we've got a difference of opinion across the table here, which we're bound to get into, because you've definitely come down on the side of the Coalesced.
Yeah, I mean, from playtesting, that just seems to me what's been better, but...
But Luke may differ in opinion. So, Luke, we can bring you back in at this point, but do you want to come back in and stand up for the Starborn, or...?
Yeah, I just think Starborn have got the upper tier from what I can see in the book, just because of the fact that they can deep strike in with half their army and you can dictate the movement phase quite a lot, where they want to be, put the damage and the pressure where you need it to be, just from experience of playing a lot of tournament games.
Yeah, you're coming down on the side of the kind of mass mobility. You know, I have to say what we've experienced in gameplay so far is just
the opposite.
Coalesce is so strong in the combat phase.
The thing is,
that's what we've seen. But
I, you know, when this book dropped, it's not like news to anybody that there were a divide in opinions on the book. You know, a lot of people weren't happy because at the end of the day, Starborn, which is kind of the reinvented new way to play the Seraphon from the old edition, is just worse. There's no other way to really put it. You know, you don't generate as many conjuration points as you did before. Everything's a bit more expensive, so it's harder to summon, which is fine because, you know, it was too powerful in the last edition. Like, you know, I don't think a lot of people will deny that. So they've kind of tamed it back. And personally, for me, when they released the new Coalesce rules, I mean, -1 damage across your entire army. Like, I've seen cavalry chargers bounce off models. Yeah, like, they just do nothing. Monsters bounce off models. I mean, if you've got 60 grots running in there, then yeah, sure, you're not really going to care. But, you know, if you've got these high damaging monsters and high damage cavalry, which a lot of armies do have, they just get so neutered, you know, their effectiveness cut in half.
But as Luke comes in, and I don't want to focus too much on this at this point, because I think we can come back to this.
Yeah.
What I want to do is work through the constellations and work through the battle scrolls. But Luke, I want to bring you back in here, because whilst, you know, Jack is making the point that, you know, the Coalesce become this super tough army in combat with opponents just bouncing back off them, particularly opponents with multiple damage. So we've seen Half Guard really neutered. We've seen the Griff Chargers from Citizens of Sigmar.
Demigriffs
just bouncing off a unit and not really achieving anything. But that is we're talking about an army that's most effective in the combat phase. You're back to mobility and deployment flexibility wins through every time when it comes to tournaments, yeah?
I mean, combat armies are very strong, especially if they have some kind of form of a teleport or a drop down, or if they can fly. Those kind of combat armies do very well, but combat armies that can just be blocked because they can't fly, it's just a lot harder to make it work. But I definitely, you're right about the about them being a lot stronger in combat, because obviously you're getting hit and you're taking less damage. And there is the abilities as well to also make them fly and make them move faster. So I'm not saying it's a bad way to play.
I mean, it depends what units you're taking. You could take the Ripidactyls and all the rest, but you're right. You can also use there's a command ability where you can make one unit fly as well, which -1 to hit on shooting as well, which is pretty effective.
And I mean, even me sit here saying, you know, Coalesce is the way forward, I have been working on Starborn lists because it is very interesting. You know, like Luke said, the teleporting is invaluable at the end of the day. Is when I've been playing Coalesce, I have definitely been missing the teleport, you know, like units of 40 skinks teleporting around the table and whatnot. So there is definitely, you know, it's not one of those where you look at the book and you go, oh, okay, Starborn, put it in the bin, Coalesce is the only way forward, or the other way around, you know, because there are competitive place for both, sides of the faction.
The amount of the breadth and depth to this book is fantastic. Liam, you probably rank as one of the longest Seraphon players for us because you love dinosaurs.
I love dinosaurs. Yes, I do, sir.
What's caught your eye out of the new book? Have you fallen either side, or are you sitting on the fence with me?
I'm sitting on the fence, but there's one thing that makes me happier, and that's Stegodons as battle line. I want the Stegageddon to happen right now.
You see,
I don't need any coalesced, anything dropping down. I just like dinosaurs, Phil.
You know, and of course, if you go Thunder Lizard, do all of those get +2 wounds? Is that right?
Yeah, yes, well, you need the Thunder Lizards for the Stegadon battle line.
Well, you need it for
the
battle line.
And you get +2 wounds on all your monsters. Yeah. And the amount of times, like, either you've been playing against me or I've been playing against you and the monster has been down to 1 wound and that Engine of the Gods have healed them up to full. You're just like, oh, if I wasn't playing Thunder Lizard, that would be gone. But hey, here we are.
Okay, I tell you what, I think that's a great point. We've had a little introduction from everybody. The first shots have been fired.
Yeah.
Let's get into looking a little bit at the constellations.
Not shots. I talk facts. The rest is just rubbish.
Yeah, that's it. You talk facts. Everybody else doesn't know anything.
Nice one, Luke. We're all in the bin. Let's have a look at the constellations, if we can drag Luke out the bin to give us his opinion on those as well.
Yeah.
Luke, I think it might be worth you covering, some of the Starborn constellations. See which one of the two has caught your eye. Liam, I'll bring you back in the middle there, and then Jack can tell Luke why he's wrong, yeah?
Okie dokie.
Right, okay, Jack, contrary to what you've said, hey, I want to talk about Fangs of Sotek, though. So.
Because I've been toying with kind of both Starborn and Coalesced, I've been looking at Fangs of Sotek and Kotal's Claw. Now, Fangs of Sotek, I've been looking at it. If anybody doesn't know what it does, adds 3 to the move for skink units. Also gives the War Scroll skinks the ability to shoot and retreat, which, you know, for me is really good. I've been working with kind of like, you know, using like 9 Pterodons and getting Alpha Strikes on key characters with Boulder Drops and stuff like that. Being able to remove like Catacrosses in one turn.
Yeah,
which is really powerful. And I've also been toying with the idea of like big units of 40 skinks buffed up with prayers and abilities, so they're like, you know, 80 shots hitting on 2s, mortal wounds on 6s, and then when you charge them they can just shoot at you as they charge and then run away out of combat as well.
What's the standard move on skinks?
8.
8. So
they go up to
an
11-inch move with a 15-inch blowpipe shot. But not only that, because it's Starborn, of course, you can teleport a unit once per turn.
So you can drop them.
So you can
teleport
like 40 skinks up on the table.
Okay.
Apart from that, the command traits isn't great because it requires you to have a Saurus general.
This is Parting Shot is the command ability.
Yeah. Parting Shot's the command ability, but like, the command trait, it means you have to have a Saurus general, which isn't bad because if you make something else your general, like a skink general or a slan general, that means you can still take a commander trait from the main bit.
Okay.
But yeah, so for me, that was kind of the main points. It was like alpha striking pterodons on like first turn or big units of
so the 3 up extra command point, not particularly excited about that.
No,
the artifact
really
that comes with it, you can pick a melee weapon,
this is kind of
and
insane.
At the end of any phase, if any wounds inflicted by the weapon in the phase were allocated to an enemy model and not negated, and that enemy model has not been slain, roll a dice on the 5 up, the enemy model is slain.
Yeah, I really like the idea of a skink chief just stabbing Nagash in the ankle and him just crumbling to dust.
Stabbing him in the ankle and then at the end of the turn on the 5 up just disappearing.
Of course it never goes like
no,
that.
No, it's never going to happen. You're never going to get the dude where you need
him. But I like the idea it is possible.
Okay, fantastic.
And then, so Kotal's Claw is kind of the coalesced side of it that I wanted to talk about.
Okay, right, yeah, let's jump into that.
Which basically gives +1 attack to all Saurus when they charge.
Nice.
Or you can spend a command point, which means they get +1 attack when they are charged. Which is quite interesting. And bearing in mind, the command trait means every time you spend a command point on a Saurus unit on a 4+, you receive an extra command point.
So with the command ability at the start of combat phase, if you do so, pick one friendly Saurus unit, totally within 24 inch. Yeah.
Which is a massive bubble. And then they get plus one to hit. Then you combine that with like an old blood, giving his plus one to hit. And bearing in mind every command point, you're getting back on a four up.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And then you stick like Croak in there or something and he generates more command points. Then I really like the idea of like big units of Saurus warriors, like units of 40. Just being on like plus two to hit, just nomming their way through units.
Yeah, yeah. And being coalesced, minus one damage.
Minus one damage, plus one attack on their jaws. Yeah.
You've still, as Luke made the mobility issue.
Yeah, exactly.
Command trait, dominant predator. Roll the dice each time the general is used to issue a command. On a four plus, you get the command point back, basically.
Yeah, which is why it's like, you know, the army already can generate a lot of command points with slants, and then you're getting a bunch of command points back.
And then we've got the eviscerating blade inside the artifact of power. Pick one of the bearer's melee weapons. If an unmodified hit roll for an attack made with that weapon is a six, the attack inflicts two mortal wounds on the target in addition to any normal damage.
Which, when you're taking like Scar Vets on Carnassals, they get like six attacks with their spear.
Yeah.
So it's like you're going to be getting two mortal wounds through maybe four. Like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is quite powerful.
Okay. Cool. Right, let's go to the guys, see what we've got for Thunder Lizards and Dracovian's Tail.
Yep.
Liam, Thunder Lizards, mate.
So this is the big boy dinosaur area here. None of this fancy tactics malarkey. This is where you want your dinosaurs, this is where you want your T-Rexes, this is where you want dinosaur lovers. So let's do a little rundown of what they do. So it makes Stegodon's battle line, so that's probably the best part. All your lizard monsters get plus two wounds, like Jack said prior in this podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
But the favourite part is the command ability. So if you've got a Bastillodon or an Engine of the Gods in the army, this basically allows you, at the end of the combat phase, if you spend this command point, to either do another Engine of the Gods ability with its... you roll 3d6 and it does a random ability on the actual Stegodon.
Mm-hmm.
Or it allows you to shoot twice with a Bastillodon, which is my favourite part.
I recently faced off with Seraphon against Cities of Sigmar, and firing twice with that bad boy against a 30-man gunner unit.
Yeah,
that was my favourite part.
And that was just one Bastillodon.
That was just one Bastillodon. It's just like big laser through them, and it was like, let's spin that up again. Why not? Okay. Sorry, Liam.
It's fine. It's just the Bastillodon's such a derpy dinosaur and it's really defensive. It's just unexpected to have a pinpoint laser beam that fires twice.
Yeah, the rule around the Bastillodon caused some confusion, but to me it's really straightforward. It's basically a massive tortoise shell, and until you crack that shell open, you don't hurt it. And the only way of cracking it open is you need to deal some mortal wounds onto it. And then once you crack it open, fine, go away, rend it, do some damage. Have fun, but you know, I like it. I think that's absolutely thematic to that model. And I love the fact they've used the core system in that way. Because everyone's like, oh no, it makes no sense. No, it makes perfect sense. It really works for me. Right, Prime War Beast, Liam.
So this is the command trait for your Thunder Lizard General. So this can be a Carnosaur, it could be a Stegodon Chief. This allows the actual creature of it to add one to the attack's characteristic of weapons used by the general's mount. So that's all your eviscerating claws of the Carnosaurs. It's all its jaws with the damage five, and it's your Stegodon's horns and trampling feet.
Yeah.
Just mean. It turns a Carnosaur from a four attack, jaw attacks of five damage to like five attacks, and you've got Coalesce popping off, and the attacks go up and the damage scales go higher. It's just brutal.
And the artifact of power, we've got the Fuchsal of Conflagration. In your shooting phase, you can pick one enemy unit within 12 inches of the bearer visible to them. Roll a dice. On a one, the artifact cannot be used again for the rest of the battle. Yeah. 2 to 3, nothing happens. And on a 4 to 5, the enemy unit suffers D3 mortal wounds. On a 6, that enemy unit suffers D6 mortal wounds. What do you think?
I think it's great. You're just throwing some at somebody. And if you roll a one, it's like, oh no, it broke in my hand. But if you roll a 6, D6 mortal wounds going in your face.
Do you know what, mate? I'm halfway through recording the battle report. I've not used that once. I'm so glad I've just read that. That bad boy's coming in on turn 3.
You watch it, you're a killer hero now.
Okay, you guys have got me pretty excited about Coalesce. I'm swinging towards your direction, but Luke, are you going to bring me back? Are you going to bring me back to the Starborn?
I'm going to try.
Okay, do your best, mate. What is it about Dracothian's tail that I need to be paying attention to?
So their abilities, basically, you set up a unit on the table and you can have one off the table, a bit like Stormcast. So you could have half your army off the table, ready to teleport in. It's not quite as powerful as the Stormcast teleport because you have to have a slan nearby. It is risky, depending, but you can just choose to do that before you deploy. So if somebody's got an alpha army that could take out Eastlands, you might not want to put them all in the sky because then you just lose the whole ability of your army. It's just all gone.
There's a few
tricks to help you slide out a bit, just to give you a little bit of risk, and you just have to be just really good with your deployment and screening and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, before we go into that, is there any limitation to when you can come in with this? This is a peer on command, is the ability, isn't it? I think you have to be on before the start of the fourth battle round, yeah? Because after that, everything is slain. But you're not really talking about keeping your army back till turn 3 anyway. You're just saying this is about turning the army into an alpha strike, yeah?
Yeah. It just allows you to go with this army, you can go really heavily MSU because the problem is with that kind of play, you don't really tend to choose who goes first. So with this, you could just spam all the units. It likes really small, cheap units, spam the table full of effective and just doing pinpointing the damage where you need to pinpoint it. It could crumble really quickly as well at the same time.
So there's risk, and as you've got to be a thinking player and making sure that you're screening well, you've got to understand that sort of competitive side to make sure you're not putting yourself at risk. In terms of the command trait then, ancient knowledge, general knows one extra spell from Celestial Domination. In addition, you can reroll one casting, dispelling, or unbinding for this general each hero phase. Do you see that as an important part of Dracothian's tale, or you don't go magic heavy with it as well to benefit from that?
It's just an important part of the game, and just to get an endless spell off, you need to get off. You might have just failed one of those dice rolls. It's just a really powerful ability, just being able to dictate something that might have not worked out. You've still got a chance to maybe stop an endless spell, cast an endless spell, cast a spell.
Yeah,
it's very strong.
I mean, one of the things we've definitely encountered in I think we're into game 5 now with the, in terms of battle reports, we're into about game 5 with Seraphon, is bound endless spells are insane. Just insane. Just the ability of being able to put those, like Geminids, right in the face of an opponent, and to know that no matter which order the next turn turns over, you know, you're going to get to move those and do what you want with those endless spells.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say it might be one of the most powerful abilities in the game, because not only do the endless spells do so many mortal wounds, if you're going second, you then get to have a second round of all those mortal wounds.
Yeah.
And on top of that, you can actually use the endless spells as a barricade.
To
block movement and close in units and stuff, but...
Certainly it's powerful. Artifact of power, Luke. We've got the God Beast Pendant.
Yeah, so this is just like another lifeline on your slan. Just on a 4+, you get your model back. You can also do some tasty little tricks by keeping. You can have launching the Soul Seeker babysitting one of your slans if someone goes in, and because you're likely to be doubled in this army if you go really heavily with units and you're very high drop. You can protect yourself against a double with your heroes. You can go, well, I've got a launch in here. They're going to take this double turn. I'll quickly send him over that boat. And on a 4+, obviously he's going to die when he goes over it. But on a 4+, he's back. or you can do it with your salamanders. You can send a launch, and it's a nifty little trick that Darren has been talking about. It's really good. Because with salamanders, you've got like dead bodies with your skinks, so you can just send them over and protect them against the double and stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, just to be clear, this is on a 4-up. The bearer of the artifact is not slain. All wounds are healed. So they're coming, but on a 4-up, you're getting this model back on full wounds, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
And more importantly as well, they've been very specific. Any wound that's currently remaining to be allocated are negated. So you could have a massive overspill of wounds, and not only do you come back on full strength, you just switch off. Can you imagine just having something on one wound and then dealing 15 wounds against it just to take that one wound off, and it just comes back on full strength and goes, yeah, no, I'm just going to ignore those remaining 14. It's pretty cute. It's pretty cute.
It's one of those. You could even put it on like Carnosaurs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
As like a lifeline on a Carnosaur.
That's insane.
It's insane.
Okay. Yeah, very, very powerful artifact.
That's great. Thanks everyone for giving me the overview of the constellations. Thank you. I was going to say celestations. That's not even a word. The constellations. Let's jump into briefly. I think we'll pick on some of our favorite units, and we'll go through that, and then maybe talk a little bit about what those lists are going to look like. Okay, let's pick upon some of our favorite units. Now, you know, already we've been fighting over what units to talk about, so it's worth saying that there is some overlap, but yeah. We've agreed amicably to talk about different units. Jack, you're going to kick things off with Saurus Old Blood on Carnosaur.
Yeah, now, ever since I started the hobby, I've really, really, really enjoyed getting these unnamed characters and finding ways to basically break them. Getting these unnamed characters and making them gods in their own right. So, yeah, I always did it with Wolf Lords on Thunder Wolves, you know, in the good old days when Saga of the Wolfborn gave him like 42 attacks and stuff like this.
Yeah.
And Frost Lords on Stonehorn. I always liked Blender Lords. So, for me, the Saurus Old Blood on Carnosaur is just that. He is a Blender Lord. Now, it does require you to stack a lot of buffs with him. So, you know, you take him in Coalesced, you take him in Thunder Lizard with the Primed War Beast, and you can do the constellation that you pick to give him +1 attack on all his weapons. And he just becomes vile, basically. He becomes vile. There's no other ways to put it. Like, six attacks on his jaws at 5 damage. It is insane.
So, 6 attacks on jaws, hitting on...
Well, that's the thing. The reason why I like him, the reason why I like him is not only is he a Blender Lord, but he's also a really good support Lord.
Yeah.
Because his command ability is that 18-inch aura of +1 to hit for Saurus.
Which is really
nice.
Which
you can give on him, you can give to other units. It's just one of those things that is really useful.
I mean, I've certainly played him where I've given the Wrath of the Seraphon, which is the command ability. I've applied it to himself, which moves those jaws to hitting on threes. Wounding on threes. -1 rend, doing 5 damage.
2s to hit when you're fighting models of 7 or less wounds. So, you know, if you're running into cavalry or hordes, then he just chomps through them all day.
So 2s and 3s, -1 rend.
5
damage.
It is insane. I've seen him do so much insane
and it's,
stuff.
It's 3 attacks, but you can go up to 4 attacks if you are...
So 4 attacks if you're coalesced because of add 1 on jaws. Yep. Then Primed War Beast gives him an extra attack on all his weapons. And then the constellation you can pick gives you +1 attacks to all heroes.
So 6 attacks.
That's just his jaws. Then he has his like 3 damage spear and his 2 damage forelimbs.
And if he's inside Thunder Lizards, he's also got the artifact with the shooting.
Well. Yeah,
and yeah.
So
he becomes a wee beastie, and all of that on 14 wounds. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. 14 wounds of the 4-up save, ignoring worsening damage by 1.
Yeah.
So So when I played my Starborn game and I didn't have him, I did really miss him.
Yeah,
like it physically hurt me.
And let's face it, it's an incredible model.
Yeah,
it's great
exactly.
To see him
it's
on
beautiful.
The table.
He does what you need to do, and he supports everybody whilst doing it.
Right. Okay. Let's move on. I think we'll pull up Liam next. Liam, what would you like to cover?
Mine's the exact opposite of Jack, to be fair. It's not a Blender Lord as such. It's more of a, I'm just going to sit here and do my own thing. You can see that stuff over there.
So, come on.
It's the Bastillodon.
The Bastillodon, of course.
Just one up Stave, the tanky god of a dinosaur. And it's just great. The new editions brought in the one up Stave, whereas before it just ignored all Ren. And it's definitely the best thing about it is just a one-up save. You can throw an arc mystic shield on there, reroll ones, throw it into rain so it's harder to hit, and then it's just got shooting, so you can get a pyramid, which is the new terrain piece, the actual Seraphon, put a Bastilla in there because it's got 12 wounds, and that's just how the pyramid works. I don't know why it can fit a Mastillodon in, but it's just there like, oh, hi there.
It's basically, it doesn't fit on it. The pyramid's just on his back. You know, that's basically what's going off, yeah. So we've got what becomes a 12-wound, you know, shooterholic.
Artillery.
You know, it is a monster, though, so you're not going to gain cover from everything. But you are at least, I mean, for me, what I've found is, that the idea that it has to take those mortal wounds before you take damage. And then, interestingly enough, even when you take damage, yes, it's rendable, but it's rendable on a 2-up, becoming a 3-up when you've taken 5 to 6 wounds. It's still not easy to crack, you know. Definitely. And then if you spin up the Engine of the God nearby,
and just
heal it back up, you know, it's just...
Especially in Thunder Lizards, where you can heal it twice.
Exactly.
At the end of a shooting phase.
So cruel, but so fun.
So there's two ways you can do the Bastillodons. I personally love the laser beam, but some people would go with the snakes because there's a lot of snakes. But what the laser beam does, it's a ranged 24-inch laser beam with 9 shots. It used to be 2d6 shots, but it's 9 now, which is a lot better on average. So it's hitting on 4s, so it's average, half of it will hit. Freeze the wound, -1 rend, 2 damage. Now that gets bumped up to 3 damage against anything with the Chaos Demon keyword. So that's all your Demonettes, Bloodthirsters, you name it, Great and Clean Ones, and all those hordes.
Yeah, Nurgle, as I found out in a recent game. so much fun.
Really hates demons.
So much fun. You know what? Cities of Sigmar handgunners don't like it too much either. Okay, Luke, what would you like to look at?
Well, I was going to talk about salamanders, but I think every single person that looks at the book, the pages just flip straight to the salamander page and they will instantly know that's the best unit. So I thought, well, let's pick something else and let's talk about the skink star priest.
All right, Luke, you're absolutely right. Everybody knows about those units and they're pretty amazing, but what is it about the Star Priest that you think's worth picking on?
Well, he's just a very powerful buff piece that just turns any unit, even skinks, into combat monsters, shooting monsters. It's got that ability that just happens in the hero phase. You can just say, look, on a 60 wound, you do a mortal wound on any unit. And that's just insanely powerful. And he also gives you a command point on the 5+ if you roll that dice. And it's just really efficient and effective for its points and a key piece to buff your army.
You know, it's got to be wholly within 12. So, you know, you're going to have to think hard if it's a big unit. But what do you think, what units do you think that would be good to apply that to? I know it works well with anyone, but has any particular unit caught your eye of that would work with those guys really well? Because if you're going MSU, it's you know, that limits it, doesn't it, the rolls of sixes. But if you've got big blocks, is that what you're thinking? Or
yeah, well, so if in that kind of list, you don't have to go all small units. You could just have one big block of 40 skinks that you drop down as a screen around your army. And all of a sudden, you're just like, well, I'll shoot that unit off with my mortal wounds. And then if they want to charge me and they don't kill all my skinks, they're going to take some serious damage.
Yeah, that
and you're
is quite
also
funny.
Screened off the whole army.
Yeah, because you could pump out a serious amount of shots with the skinks, couldn't you? And yeah, like you say, those sixes, you're going to generate a few mortal wounds along the way. Although my experience with Half-Guard is every time I need a six, it never comes along.
You never
but
get
you know,
sixes when you
need that's another story. Okay, great, Jack. You want to pick on another unit?
Yeah, I'm going to talk about Pterodons. Pterodactyl, you know, the model themselves have always been a love for me. This kind of, you know, Royal Air Force of space dinos coming for you. And they're quite good. You know, they have their boulder drop, which on a four up, they do D3 mortal wounds when they move over things, something.
Yep.
But one of the biggest changes is they've now added chiefs. So a Pterodon chief and a Ripidactyl chief, and the Pterodon chief for a command point makes it a two up. And like I said earlier, you know, when your Fangs of Sotek with the +3 move, they go to a 19 inch move instead of 16. And then you can run them 6 inches for a 25 inch move. So you can kind of get that Alpha Strike boulder drop on someone. And then D6 shots each with their bowlers, which, like Luke said, in combination with the Skink Heroes, the +1 to hit, the mortal wounds on sixes, they become quite interesting. And even in combat, I mean, they're jaws, so 4 attacks each again if you've got that mortal wounds on sixes and the additional hits. I just think they can be a really interesting skirmish unit.
Yeah, okay. I like it. MSU or big blocks?
It's one of those. Because of the Pterodon chief, you know, there's arguments for both. Either you've got MSU harassment, but if you're kind of going with the Pterodon chief, you kind of want one big block for that, just one huge priority boulder drop on 2+ for the command point.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're having to spend a load of command points on things.
Why not both, though? I'm sure it could be done.
Yeah, why not both?
Liam, where would you like to go next?
Stegadon.
Oh, what a surprise.
Stegadon. Yeah, you're not worried about going where everyone was expecting you to go.
Nah.
Come on then, tell me about the big beast with the horns.
So it's just generally a lot better now. The horns are a lot more brutal, 4 damage. The bow on the back of it hits a lot harder than it did with a 24-inch range, freeze attacks, freeze, -1 and 3 damage. Mm-hmm. That's... Ugh. And they've brought back one of my old favourite units from 8th edition Fantasy Battle, and that's the Skink Chief on Stegadon. They just got rid of it in the old Seraphon book, and I was gutted because I had a little plastic Skink Chief just running about like, what do I do with this? And now it's brought him back as a separate hero choice, which is a lot better now because you can buff Skink Heroes and all that lot with +1 attack. So this can be on your Pterodons, can be on your Salamanders, Skink Chiefs, Skinks. It ties into all of it, really.
Yeah, I don't think we can go far without mentioning the Sunfire Throwers, though, surely, because I've seen those.
AOE.
I've used those firsthand against a massive block of Plague Bearers.
It's mean. The mortal, it's just every model that's within 8 inches of it.
Yeah.
You just do, roll a dice, and is it a 4 up?
5 up. Five up.
Five up does a mortal wound.
Yeah, normal, it's cute.
Against normal hordes, that's horrific. Against Plague Bearers...
Yeah, well, the Plague Bearers had the ignore, but you know, it still did a hell of a lot of damage because I parked myself next to a hell of a lot of Plague Bearers. I think it was a unit of 30, and I managed to get pretty much most of them in there. So that wasn't actually recorded on a battle report, was it? It was a test game. Yeah. So I think Jack's quite glad that never gets seen in public ever again. You're right. I really like the fact the Massive Horns are doing 4 damage. It's quite reliable in combat. It's 3s and 3s. You know?
With the smaller the unit, the better the save the Stegadon gets as well, because it's like rearing up with its head, trying to block them off.
Yeah, you're talking about the Armored Crest, where if you're attacking a unit that's less than the five, up to 5 models, isn't it?
It's very thematic.
Yeah, I like the idea of that. I really do, kind of protecting itself with its head. Mm. Right, Luke, what are you going to surprise us with next?
It's not really a surprise, but I'm going to talk about Lodhkrok.
Okay.
He's probably the best War Scroll in the whole of Age of Sigmar, especially for his points. He alone can make a Stormcast army miles better if you just add him as an ally.
Yeah, I'm just laughing because Jack's nodding. It's not often I see you two agreeing with each other. This is a moment. This is a moment we should all take and let it soak in. Come on then.
He just does everything. He's so good at casting. He generates his points back if he survives the whole game in command points. He's an absolute beast in combat. It's just, there's nothing that he does not really do. And he's like a key piece as well. It's not like he does something that everything else can do. He just does something that nothing else can do all in one War Scroll.
And
it's just insane.
I mean, I've seen him. I've only played against Croak. I've not played Croak. but I've seen him just shut an army down. You know, I was playing Sylvaneth against Croak, and forget it, no magic was coming out of my army the entire game. It was just, no, you're not doing that. It was so painful. Because obviously he has the four casts, the four denies, but you can also give him all the boons to that. Well, if you're taking Coalesce, certainly. Oh, no, actually, what does... Is it?
It's just the Seraphon Allegiance.
It's just ability, the Seraphon yeah. Allegiance ability, yeah, yeah. So it's pretty
nasty.
Making
like plus two to cast.
You mentioned, okay, so you see such a combination of abilities then. What makes him great inside a Stormcast army? You talked about allying him in. How would that work?
Well, so you'll supply a Stormcast army with the amount of command points, whatever they need their command points for. He's very good at like sniping key pieces out. It's all in his war scroll. So he doesn't really need the Seraphon abilities to make him insane. He's just insane himself as a war scroll.
Full stop.
And he just does stuff a Stormcast army doesn't do. If you could ally him into any order army, you'd just have him in every single order army you could ally him into. It's just only Stormcast like lets you have Lizardmen.
I've got a feeling I need to be breaking out my gold can of spray. Right, that's brilliant, guys. Thank you very much for that. What I'm going to do is give you all one shot at what the what your list is like. Now, you've played Seraphon like five or six times, but yeah. Every time you've been limited by the models you've got.
Yeah.
So what is your Seraphon build looking like?
Like, I'm never going to say it's the most competitive build. You know, if I wanted to go competitive, I would go like, you know, Skinks or Salamanders or something. But I have a feeling somebody else is going to talk about them. But the list I really, really, really want to do is the quadruple Bastiladon list.
Okay.
Just this armored core of laser beam shootingness in a Thunder Lizard army. You know, that's like 18 shots from each Bastiladon, which is, I don't know how many shots that is. Like, what's 18 times 4?
Plenty.
It's like 60 odd shots at 2 damage. You can throw some skink heroes in there to make them better. It's
72
just
by the way. I just wanted to see that.
72 shots.
I was waiting for anybody else to jump in, but no, I'll go with it. 72 shots.
So yeah, it's just like the look on your opponent's face as these four Bastiladons that don't die just laser beam through their entire army.
It's
24 nice
inch range. It's well within the realms of possibility to be firing all four in turn
and
one.
With like Croak and Skink heroes, you can easily have four command points a turn.
Yeah. So whether you've got enough targets to kill.
Them. Yeah, exactly.
But surely
if
anybody's setting up opposite.
Yeah,
four Bastiladons.
They
thinking,
know to keep 24 inches.
I might hang back a bit, yeah? Okay, Liam, what is your list looking like?
Mine is just Stegadons. So Jack with the Bastiladons, I'm going with Stegadons. Just the Stegageddon. Just Stampede, Moo, up the board. No objectives, just go forward, Stampede.
So basically an appalling idea, but thematically fantastic, yeah?
It's like open range or whatever that movie was, where it's three cows going forward. They got an end goal, and that's what I'm going to do in an army list. I've got an end goal to get to the other side of the board.
How many Stegadons do you think you can smash into this list of nonsense?
Eight.
Eight
easily.
Okay. Yeah, lovely. Luke, bring us back to the realm of Sigmar. Tell us what a competitive list is going to look like.
Well, I think the great thing about the book is there's going to be, I could probably see four or five lists that are going to be competitive, but the way that I see, if I were to take it to a tournament, I would just spam loads of units of Salamanders in singles, like we were talking about with the Legion abilities, and just have Launch and the Soulseeker Endless Spell, some Geminids and a Balewind, and then Aslan and Croak and the Star Priest, and then maybe a big block of Skinks just for a nice screen that can also do a mortal punch when you need it. They send them over with Launching in the hero phase, and they can snipe something off with the shooting phase. Yeah. And then like run away in if you get doubled back over the boat or use Launching to protect your heroes. So that just that kind of thing. But just the great thing, obviously, about Salamanders, I know everybody knows it, but if you just spam them, is like an 80-point unit, which is good at shooting and also good in combat. You can't really kill the Salamanders until you've killed all the Skinks, and all you do, you're wasting all that effort to kill an 80-point unit. And then when there's like 10 of them or 12 of them on the board in singles like that, it's just going to be a nightmare. I can see it dominating the meta that we know of now, but obviously there's no meta right now because there's no tournaments. But
well, we went into Warhammer World, I think the day before it closed down for COVID.
Yeah.
I was collecting Jack from university, and we said, you know what, let's just go. There was nobody there, was there? They closed the gaming hall down, and the shop was still open. And sat on the shelf was just a single salamander, which we, you know, hungrily grabbed.
Grabbed it,
but that was the only one. So I'd like to say we bought the last salamander available
in existence.
It's
the last salamander that's ever going to exist.
As soon as Games Workshop has spun back up, no doubt, they'll be pressing those salamanders out like who knows what. Okay, guys, thank you so much for joining me tonight. Hopefully everybody's found it interesting / confusing / infuriating. No doubt everybody's got their own opinions. Don't forget, you can leave us a voicemail if you want to pass on comments, or you know, reach out to us on you know, Twitter, Facebook, all of the channels of which will be in the link below. Right, I think that's it for this week. I know that we're planning a live show, the four of us, because we're trying to find ways of you know, getting back together. So we'll be doing a live show on YouTube shortly, I think, where we're going to do a little bit of remote gameplay. Not quite sure how it's going to work out, but it's going to be like a versus gameplay where we're going to take a few characters against each other. So look out for that on YouTube. Don't forget to subscribe there if you're not already a member. All that remains for me to do is to thank everybody for joining me tonight. Jack, thanks for coming along.
Yeah, that's great. I love talking about Seraphon, big old dinos.
And you had no choice because you live in the same house. Liam, thank you, man, for staying sane long enough to talk.
It's creeping out of me, but it's been a pleasure.
You lost it a little bit when you said eight Stegodons, but I think you kept with us there.
And triggering.
Luke, thank you so much for bringing in the competitive side of it. It's always good to have those different points of view.
Yeah, cheers. Yeah, it was good to talk, and just keep trying to chip away, and everyone stay safe in these difficult times, and be ready for the tournament scene when it comes back. And obviously,
yeah, exactly. And you need to get playing again, Luke, because practice. Yeah, that's what you're famous for.
Luke's an old has-been now. He doesn't know anything. It's been like 3 months, Luke.
The game's changed. I tell you what, Luke, we've had a couple of people comment they want to see you on the battle report. So when this lockdown's over, it will be fantastic to have both you and Liam along to do some battle reports. One, to expand out the armies available for battle reports, but it will be absolutely a pleasure to have you guys here so we can kind of get the old gang together and play a few games. But also, someone commented on one of Luke, you're not going to believe this. Someone commented on one of the battle reports that they thought I could take you at Age of Sigmar.
You can. Anybody can beat me.
I've got a feeling it's one of your mates being sarcastic, but I was most pleased with that comment. It made my day. Okay, let's call it a night. Thank you all for joining us, and we will see you again for episode 6.
See ya.
Yeah, see you there. Cheers, guys. Bye.
Thank you for tuning into Combat Gauge, the official Wargamer Online podcast. If you want to check out more of our content, you can find us on YouTube / Wargamer Online, or Twitter and Instagram @ Wargamer Online. Alternatively, you can leave us a voice message at anchor.fm/ Wargamer Online. Don't forget to check out our premium content on our dedicated wargaming website, www.wargameronline.com.